Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, I go off on a very moving and poignant diatribe at the top of the show, and then we'll get some Steve O. Tells this very interesting story about getting sober. It's been 12 years now, but a harrowing story about getting sober. We'll get into that. First, I'll tell you about J.B. Weld. We love J.B. Weld. I love J.B. Weld. If you don't love J.B. Weld, then I don't love you. Huh? How about that? How do you like them apples? Let's not pay the repairman. You fix it yourself with J.B. Weld. Big or small repairs, home or garage. Ordinary household glue. Well, it has the word ordinary right in the title, doesn't it? You need stronger. You need better. You need J.B. Weld. I know these guys. I know the president. Hung out with them in SEMA back when we used to be able to do things like have SEMA. Company's been around for over 50 years. Proudly made in the USA. Keep J.B. Weld in your toolbox, kitchen drawer, craft room for wood, metal, plastic, and more. You don't glue it. J.B. Weld it. It's available at jbweld.com, Home Depot, Lowe's, AutoZone, Advance Auto Parts, O'Reilly, Walmart, Amazon, Michaels, and more. It is J.B. Weld. Sports are starting to come back. Podcast One. Sportsnet has all the action covered. Tons of different sports podcasts, something for everyone. Rich Eisen Show, Steve Austin Show, The Deegans with Metal Militia star Brian Deegan, plus many more. Tune into all the great podcasts with Podcast One Sportsnet.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Steve O. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, Dave Mason stops by, and Dave Damashek's here for good sports. And now, warning, the following show features stunts performed either by professionals or under the supervision of professionals. Accordingly, we must insist that no one attempt to recreate or reenact any stunt or activity performed on this show. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Man, did you get it on? Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you. Right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Handball, Brian? Yeah, music. It's so identifiable, right?
Yeah.
It's always weird when you hear that stuff before it's identifiable. Not you, but like when you've been on the in the meetings, and they're like, they're pitching music, and here's what we do. And you'd play it, and I guarantee half the people in the room go, that's lame. It sounds like a hillbilly thing. How's that stunts? How's that crazy young MTV?
So short. Three notes, right. That's a song.
Right, but it's so effective. All right, so Steve O will be in here. Has he been sober for 10 years plus?
Yeah.
Jesus. Here's how old we all are. Steve O has been sober for over a decade. Like a guy who I just was synonymous with drunken and out of control. It has been, he's been sober essentially since my teenage kids were 2 years old. That's how long Steve O has been sober.
They've only known a sober Steve O.
Yeah. I know. I'm going to have to bring him over and get him lit. You're right.
Well, and like he says in his special, he says, do you know the difference between doing this shit high and doing this shit when you have clarity and concern for your own body? That's huge.
And just so people don't misconstrue what I'm saying, I'm not going to bring Steve O over and force him to get drunk. I'm going to force the booze on my kids. So, okay, before you start with the letters and
the
tweets.
You're not a monster.
No.
So
respect the process.
I had thoughts. I had Gargos in here an hour ago screaming. Gargos is funny when he gets wound up, because when he gets wound up, he goes high register. And he was...
Get shrill.
He was getting pissed off about Reasonable Doubt, by the way, I'll be tomorrow. But he was so pissed at the city of Los Angeles. I was thinking about it. So Gargos is one of these, you know, he's intellectually honest about all we can ask for. He hates Trump, and he also hates Garcetti, and he also hates Newsom. He hates everyone who, in his estimation, are doing a bad job. I think he would feel that way. Probably feels that way about cocktail waitresses who are doing a bad job as well. So, look.
You're an affront to the server industry.
Well, you know, it can simultaneously be true that Trump is doing a bad job and Newsom's doing a bad job. They can both be true. He was all wound up because, as I've said, and what you guys need to really understand is the city and the state are always going to have a certain amount of hypocrisy in terms of we need the taxpayers to kind of pay their taxes on time and pay their parking tickets and get all their licenses and permits in order. And if the homeless guy wants to take a dump in the street, that's kind of his thing. We can't really do any. There's an element of that in every society. It's not really avoidable. It's just when it hits a tipping point. You know, it's just when, you know, Garagos is telling me that he's got. So what Garagos has to deal with is he has homeless people taking over his business in downtown L.A. and he has clients on the west side on La Brea who, when they reopen safely their salon, cops show up and arrest them. And you see, that's the tipping point of a society, right? Mm-hmm. That's when you take guys like Garagos, who are big-time taxpayers and big-time job creators, and you make them go, fuck it. If you guys are going to be Johnny on the spot with a taxpayer who's trying to safely reopen their business and be asleep at the wheel when the homeless guys are invading my outdoor kiosk that I've had to build, then what's in it for me? And that's
what's the point?
That's kind of what I've always been talking about, which is the taxpayer versus the empty bag. Even if the empty bag's the empty bag, you still have to kind of pretend like you're interested in that. And if you're only interested in people that'll cut you a check, that's good for a little while, but eventually the check cutters move to a different state. So I'll just, he was just at a high register and screaming.
Oh, good.
And it made me laugh. So
but it's your team
that.
Versus their team. They don't have enough intellectual honesty to realize that two things can be true. You can hate Trump and you can hate Garcetti. They're doing a fucking horrible job. That's my team.
Right?
That's
your. And why do you have to ignore it? I mean, for somebody who says, because I deal with both federal criminal justice and I'm a business owner in the city and the state. And as recently as yesterday, we had, they tell us, okay, for the restaurants, a perfect example, you got to go outside. So what do? I hire a guy, we build, I spend money, I have this carpenter build a kind of what are planters to, so that we can have outdoor dining. What's the next thing that happens? The homeless use it as an encampment, okay? And I tell the guy, the one homeless guy, I said, dude, you've got Project Room Key. You got four of the luxury hotels on Fig Avenue. Go home. You're right there. Not go back where you came from because you didn't come from the L.A. Grand.
Well,
but you live at the L.A. Grand rent-free. Plus, they'll deliver alcohol and cigarettes to you. Why are you sitting here on my table? I said, if you're hungry, I got a meal inside. I'll give you a meal to go. But why are you sitting here when I'm trying to just keep, see those 10 people there? They're trying to stay employed. I don't need to do this. I have no desire to do this. It's just as easy for me to just shut it down and let everybody go on unemployment. But these guys have been with me for years, so I'm deciding to deficit spend and try and keep it open. And you're going to just plant down here because you can't walk three blocks to the free hotel room you get up at 3rd and Fig?
Well, these guys, as far as the hotel rooms go, they like shitting al fresco. Okay? So it's a certain breed of cat that likes to shit out. They don't like being confined in a bathroom, you know, feeling the walls closing in.
Well, then explain this. Because last night, I then get awakened because at 1:30 in the morning, one of the future senators that's homeless on the street is broken into 10E, and he's in the employee locker area, and we've got him on the video. I said, what guy breaks into the employee lockers? And they said, well, he's kind of loaded or something, and he's in the lobby area or whatever and rummaging around. And mind you, this is on the same day that LAPD calls because another patron got assaulted by a crazy woman out front who's got a knife, who literally chases people up and down 7th Street with her knife. And so they finally wanted the videotape. And I said, well, why do you – I'm talking to the detective yesterday. Why do you want the videotape? Yeah, we're going to prosecute. I said, you don't sound too excited about that. Yeah, I'm not. They just somebody told me I had to because she's got a knife. I mean, that's what you're dealing with.
That's what we're dealing with. Yeah. Mark said something very – yes.
He does go into soprano register,
I know,
right, when he's
upset. Makes me laugh. He did said something that was very telling because, as you know, I'm always just kind of looking at the signs and not really – I don't need the numbers or the data. I'll just sort of see the signs, how people act and react. He said people – women – he employs a fair amount of women. Women are scared to walk in downtown now. They weren't scared to walk a couple of years ago. So the way downtown went, Los Angeles is, they would have been scared in the 70s, 80s, and beginning of the 90s. Then the Staples Center came in, then a lot of rehabbing buildings and building new, and then all of a sudden, they walked around at night. They walked their dogs and pushed their strollers at night. No more. Now there's no more walking at night, which it's going to... It'll follow the same trajectory as Manhattan and Broadway. It is like they were scared, then they weren't scared, then they were scared. It falls apart faster than it's rejuvenated, because the rejuvenation means high rises and staple centers and buildings and sidewalks, and you know, that's multi-year.
It's dependent. The rejuvenation is dependent on people being a Staples Center and people being at downtown LA. Or what's it called? The little adjacent
LA Life.
Thank you. Yeah, all the restaurants and everything. If there's not people bustling at all times, it could be a scary area.
Yeah, and that's where we're getting to.
But you know, those empty full bags. They want to follow you now when you leave town.
Oh,
you know, they're talking about taxing you for 10 years after you leave.
Yeah, it was funny.
Isn't that great?
I was talking to Drew about that, and I said, obviously they know they're driving people out. They're going to drive the Mark Garagoses of the world out. Mark Garagos doesn't need to really live in Los Angeles. He spends his life on the road anyway. He could easily live in Texas or Utah or wherever. But anyway, And Drew said, I don't think they care if you leave. And I said, oh, they care if you leave. That's why they're tacking on the 10-year retroactive. I can't believe that's legal.
How is that enforceable?
They're not going to. There's no way that's going to pass. But why can't they try carrot? Why do they go right to stick? Oh, fine, leave. We're going to take your money anyway. Why not incentivize people to stay instead of threaten them to leave?
I don't know. I keep trying to figure out, like, what is afoot? Like, I was thinking about it earlier today, and I realize it's kind of our fault for being cowards. You know, the population has sort of turned into cowards. Most people are sort of cowardly now. They sort of worry about things they shouldn't be worried about. I mean, you know, we're out of problems, official problems. We're now in a coward department. And the government is just making rules depending on what the people want. And so what people do is we watch the news scares us because that's the business they're in. Then we overreact, and then they make policy based on us being fearful because we're watching the news. Somebody sent me a tweet today, and they were just asking Americans, like, what percentage of people that are dying of COVID are under 30 and what percentage are over 50 and what? And of course, they had the numbers all off. They think that there's a much higher percentage of people dying at a young age and a lower percentage of people dying like over 85. Remember at the very beginning, I kept saying they're not giving us the age of death. They're not giving out ages. They refuse to give out ages, or at least they weren't. And everyone else thought it was a HIPAA thing or something thing. And I was a little more, no, they're trying to steer us toward fear, because obviously 87-year-old dies in a nursing home, no big whoop. Young man dying, young woman dying, that's fear-based. I mean, that's going to agitate us. And so we're walking around thinking that this thing is killing younger people at a much higher rate than it is. It's like 10 times higher in terms of the average person. I mean, you just ask them what the numbers are, and we're downplaying the older stuff. And it's not us doing it. That's a more fearful scenario that is being ginned up by the news. And it's not the news's fault. The news is trying to sell shit and make money. The politicians, the news are going to do what the news are going to do. They're going to give you the worst case scenario all the time with all the, you know, grim milestones and everything else that's in there. And if things get better, they'll say it's ticking a little bit toward the positive, but still with 170,000 people dead. So they're going to do what they're going to do. Understand that, everybody. It's not a political thing. They're going to scare you. That's what the news does. I mean, you know, we were getting worked up about murder hornets for 10 minutes, for Christ's sake, because somebody found a hornet. So, okay, they're going to do what they're going to do. The politicians are going to act based on essentially how scared or unscared that the constituency is. We're California. We're world-class pussies. We're all scared shitless. Everyone here's a narcissist. So we get fucking locked down and shut down more so than anyone else. And it's our fault for being cowards. That's it. We're cowards. We act like cowards. And, you know, Dr. Drew goes on Twitter and says it's not as bad as people think it is. And we got to fucking shut that guy down. Cowards. Everyone who disagrees with something, everyone says we got to reopen a business or something. Now, these people need to be shouted out of the room. We're cowards. People don't get that. We're turning into cowards, and it's not serving us. It's agitating us. It's making us unhappy. And by the way, it's ruining businesses and economies. We shouldn't be such cowards. Everyone should really think about what that is, what that means, what this country was built on, where people came from to get to this country, and try to reel in the cowardly part a little bit, because CNN and the news are not going to let up with the scare, and Garcetti and Gavin Newsom are not going to let up in the puss department. They're going to just they're just going to dance to the tune of the cowards. But if we want to be cowards, then we deserve what we get. So please, people, try to get your fucking shit together, would you, a little bit, and stop being pussies. All right, Dave Mason is on the line.
Inspiring.
It's my inspirational speech. Jesus Christ, it's scary how many people have turned into fucking full-blown cowards. I mean, I've been seeing it coming for a long time, but Anyway, don't blame the politicians. Don't blame CNN. Go find a mirror and figure out how you turned into such a world-class pussy, and then let's see if we can solve some of these problems. Dave, are you on?
I am on. How do I sound?
You sound like a coward. No.
Oh, wow.
No, you sound good.
Nice.
So sports reopening, things are getting back going. I mean, there's NBA's kind of fun watching from the bubble. I don't mind it that much. I don't know. Dave, Brian, you guys watch sports. What do you think watching NBA playoffs from the bubble?
I like it. The action is great. I mean, I think they did a pretty good job with it, actually. It looks a lot better than I thought it would. I thought it was going to have that high school gym feel to it, but you watch it. It looks pretty good. It almost looks like you're watching a game in front of fans, you know, just with the sound and everything. So I'm pleasantly surprised by it. And once again, the action's been great on it. So no complaints there. People have been chomping at the bit the last few months to get some action down, and they're back in full force. So we love it.
I don't think it's hurt the UFC from what I can see. The UFC feels fine. I mean, watching it, I don't. Baseball feels a little weird because this is big, empty stadiums. I don't know what football's going to feel like. NASCAR feels kind of fine. I don't know. Brian, what do you think?
I haven't watched a single second of basketball, partially because the Warriors are not playing this year in the playoffs, and partially because it just feels weird. But I did watch a little bit of baseball, and there is the crowd noise piped in, and maybe this is the sound effects guy speaking very specifically. As hard as they're trying to do the sound effects of the crowd, they're not timing it right. They're not getting like they should be booing when the pitcher throws over to first for the third time, the visiting pitcher. The crowd noise should escalate or rise based on hits and extra base hits and stolen bases, but they're not doing it. It's just fucking crowd noise that occasionally gets a little louder. It's more distracting than if it was empty.
It was funny. Someone sent me a tweet. It's like he said, Trump's golfing when he should have been thrown out the first pitch at the Yankees game. And I was like, he probably just didn't want to hear the sound effects guy playing the booze. You know, and the sound effects guy's like, hey, I'm just doing my job. You know, yeah. when the pitcher wipes off too many signals, eventually I have to hit the boo button.
And yeah, when the catcher comes out to talk on the mound,
I hit the boo button. And when Trump gets out there, I got to hit the boo.
Yeah, you're simulating real life.
So, Dave, what has your scene been like at Bet Online? Like, is it a lot of pent up action, and now it's all kind of getting released on the basketball playoffs?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a challenging few months for everybody. Our casino numbers were through the roof, our poker numbers are through the roof, and we were grinding on the sports scene. But now that they're back, I mean, players are just coming back in full force. I mean, even the sporting events that were going on during the down months, like those UFC cards were just, I mean, we were setting record numbers. That Masvidal card, that was by far the biggest bet card we've ever done here at Bet Online. But yeah, I mean, the baseball action is great. NHL action is great. NBA is awesome. These golf event tournaments are through the roof. And, you know, NFL's, what, 3 weeks? About 3 weeks, NFL starts. College football, we'll see. But as long as we have NFL, we'll be rocking and rolling.
Yeah. You know, the only problem with the COVID-19 in the NFL, for me, traditionally, best time of the season. There's two reasons I love the NFL beginning. I love hanging out and watching the games with the usual suspects, and it usually marks the end of the summer, and the summer always goes out with a big flurry of heat. You know, there's this big, it's always like, oh man, it's September, it's so hot, how can it be so hot? And then it starts to cool off, and then you grab an IPA and you watch the game, and it's this great feeling to it. But here's the problem this year with the COVID-19. Normally, when we get to the end of the summer, pre-NFL season, I'm usually at my lightest weight, anticipation of packing on the weight for the NFL. I always pack on 15 pounds of the season.
Hibernating for the winter, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's hot, you're in and out of the pool, you're a little leaner at the end of the summer, and then the NFL hits, and the hot wings and the pizza and the IPAs, and then I always pack on 15 pounds. Now I'm heavy going into the kickoff of the football season, so I may be morbidly obese now at the end of the NFL season, and that's
dark days.
That's an issue. Hey, Dave.
Yo.
What time is it wherever you're at? I'm curious. And then Brian has a question.
I'm on Mountain Time, so I guess that's what
an
2:30?
Hour. Yeah.
Oh, that's it, huh? Oh, I didn't know that.
Almost at mid-afternoon nap time once I get off this call.
Sorry, Brian, yes?
Yeah, Dave, you're a betting guy. What odds would you give? I guess it's a question you can answer in parts. Well, what odds would you give for like a full college football season happening? Partially, like, you know, just the SEC and maybe the, you know, I don't know, the ACC playing, or a postponed season. If you had to, you know, maybe give odds to those or another outcome that I might not know of.
Yeah, I mean, you know, some in the Pac-12, they're not playing. You know, Big Ten, they're not playing. A couple teams might try to play, but it's a mess. We've had those odds up and down. SEC, we actually put the week one odds up yesterday. They're planning on going forward, but I mean, you know, it's. I think they'll start, but I put it a coin flip if they actually finish. I mean,
I was going to say, what do you think about the season getting canceled midway through? The reason I bring it up, Notre Dame today announced they had 5 kids test positive today for COVID, and it's such, Adam, to your point, it's such a different ecosystem. You know, college versus, you know, pros. Pros, you can kind of bubble. Guys are responsible. They're adults. They have homes. These kids are all living together in college, you know, amongst other students, ostensibly, if the schools go back or not.
Plus, they're not getting paid, too. Yep. I mean, that's the thing. I mean,
they're not getting paid, but yes, these are.
Well, you know, some guys are getting paid, but NFL, it's not like their profession yet. So it's a mess, man. I mean, you know, it's been a mess for months, changing rules, and you know, you have these bets. You know, the MLB announces they're going from 10 to 16 teams in a playoff the day of the season. I mean, you know, we have odds to make the playoffs, yes, no, on the site. And now it's like, well, these odds, we got to blow them the frick up because, I mean, they've gone from 10 to 16 and the odds are based on 10 teams. So it's been like that nonstop. So, you know, from what we're trying to do is just make sure the wording's as tight as possible. I mean, we're putting Heisman odds back up now. Is there even going to be a Heisman? You know, you got to take Pac-12 guys off. Now what do we do with the wagers that were bet on Pac-12 players? And that every day it's a freaking headache, but whatever.
Dave, I'm glad you reminded me of that, because one thing I wanted to ask you next time we talked was, it was a big news in the preseason, spring training when it was going on. There was a prop bet I think you guys were hosting about how many Houston Astros would get hit by a pitch this year. Are you still honoring that bet for people who bet beyond it?
No, I mean, we know that's just a prime example. It's just, you know, we had a no action bet, and, you know, we had people bitching. Oh, I bet the under. It's like, dude, you know, that's based on 162 games, not 60, for God's sakes. You know what I mean? So, you know, we've been generous on stuff too, like the NBA and NHL divisions. How we graded those was we graded the winners of each division. Like the NHL didn't even have an official winner of divisions, but we graded the leader of the regular season, whatever team was leading those four divisions, as the winner, and we no action everybody else. And we actually ended up doing the same for NBA as well, even though they did technically have a divisional winner. So, you know, we're trying to be as generous as possible in some of the gray area stuff. You know, we graded both sides winners on stuff, you know, winners and no action on the losers and all that crap. But, you know, if it's black, there's just no argument there, man. You know what I mean?
That's fair.
If you're bitching about that, you're just taking a shot, and you can the door's over there if you don't want to bet here.
The door's over there. Hey, Dave Mason, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. We'll be checking in soon. I'm curious about, we'll get into maybe presidential stuff next time we speak.
Oh, I can't wait.
Thanks, Dave Mason.
All right, guys, take care.
Thank you. And let me hit Bet Online. No shortage of action with our exclusive partner, betonline.ag. MLB's in full swing. NBA, well, we talked about that. UFC hasn't slowed down. Boxing's still good. NASCAR's rolling along. Bet Online has best odds and lines for upcoming games and matches. Need more? Bet Online has simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC daily. Also, hundreds of live casino games, poker tournaments, best props in the business as well. And you can visit betonline.ag, it's our exclusive partner at Podcast One. Don't forget, use the promo code PODCAST1 for your free sign up bonus today. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. All right, other things I was wanting to get into. Steve O's going to be in here in a second. I had a Bill Maher clip I wanted to play. Had a Denzel clip I wanted to play. Had a Kamala clip I wanted to play.
Diverse.
I thought Kamala. Am I saying that
Kamala.
Right?
Kamala.
Kamala.
Kamala's the wrestler. Kamala's giant wrestler from the 80s.
Kamala she delivered her entire speech without a hiccup. I'm always impressed. I'm impressed at people who, and the Obamas did that as well. I'm impressed by people's ability to just stand there and mow through 17 pages of dialogue on their feet without so much as a weird swallow or in breath or out breath or whatever. It is impressive. And I'm coming from a place of a guy who doesn't read very well. So for me, I'm super impressed by it, but it's pretty amazing that these people who, you know, they're politicians and they're, you know, they're kind of celebrities, but they're not really spokespeople. You know what I mean? They just get in there and just murder that teleprompter, just boom.
So freaking polished. And I thought of you when I was watching her, because, you know, there was Maya Rudolph had been doing her, you know, when that was all happening. You thought Maya Rudolph does a really good Kamala Harris. No, Kamala Harris does a really good Maya Rudolph. They sound exactly the same.
I know, they sounded exactly the same. They speak from a part of their throat that's a deeper part. A deeper in the throat part. I don't know. I don't have any training. I don't know how to say it, but their voice isn't up front. It's back.
Yeah.
Right?
You're right.
Yeah.
I saw someone on Twitter address this exact same thing. Kamala Harris speaking to no one, basically, I mean, a handful of people. They're like, yeah, she's used to it. She's a senator. Like, oh, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. The Senate's always empty.
Yeah. So I was also thinking, like, as I was driving in, I was thinking, there's
it's all a wiring thing. I guess it's a wiring thing. So I thought Obama is so poised and his so sorted and smooth. The delivery is flawless. Like it's got so much style to it. Yep. It doesn't have substance to it. In my mind, I never know what he's talking about. He's saying a lot of real important stuff, but it never really has any specifics to it. It's just we're better, we're stronger, we need to come together. It's all platitudes, but it's delivered in this crazy, it's so in a super attractive way, right? Yeah,
he's a master orator.
And his wife's the exact same way. She's just talking pure platitudes, but in a masterful way. And I thought, it's so attractive to some people, or to many people. And then I started thinking about, well, what would be, like, who would be the opposite? And then I thought, oh, Jordan Peterson would be the opposite of Barack Obama. Jordan Peterson says everything in a very horrible way. Like, and it's just in a way that's not an attractive
style,
way.
Yeah.
It's not packaged well.
Yeah, you look at him. I mean, I've interviewed him. I know him. He's in our movie and stuff like that. He has the most substance and the least attractive delivery system. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Now, if you're wired like me, I don't really care what the package is. I just want what's in the package, right? But so many, and I've had this discussion. I'm a lot the same way, which is like, it's not what you're saying, it's how you're saying it, you know, or whatever that is. And I can't make heads or tails of what Michelle Obama is saying, but it's delivered in the best way ever, which is super attractive to a large group of society, a larger group of society than Jordan Peterson. Jordan Peterson says things and it's sort of off. He's sort of off-putting, but everything he says is statistically there, you know?
Yes. And like the difference between macro and micro, if you ask somebody afterwards, what did you think about Obama's speech?
Sure.
You'd say it was beautiful. It was masterful. I was, you know, the charm. I was swept up. What did he say? And I can tell you.
We're good.
Right. And I could tell you, working in a newsroom while this was playing live, trying to get sound bites, it was very difficult because exactly the point you're making, what do you highlight? What do you stop down on in feature? Because no one's really saying anything. So to find a 10, 12 second clip was actually a little difficult.
But delivered with style points through the roof. And then I really realized, living in Hollywood in Los Angeles, and how, you know, Obama is the toast of the town. I mean, you can talk George Clooney or Brad Pitt all you want, but the biggest celebrity in Hollywood would be the Obamas, right? I mean, they would be.
That's fair.
They'd be. If anyone said, we're going to throw a dinner party, you can't have Brad Pitt or you can't have George Clooney and Obama. You could have Obama or you could have Clooney, but you can't have Obama. I think everyone would just say Obama.
Bye, Brad.
They would. See you, Brad. So, and I've been to parties with George Clooney and those their ilk, and it's like it's cool. But if Obama was there, it'd really be cool.
Royalty,
right? So then, what is it? And they don't have that feeling about Jordan Peterson, obviously. So I realize the style and the aesthetic and the whatever the invisible part of being a human is, that thing that just drips, he exudes that. Los Angeles.
Sort of effortless charm or charisma.
Yes,
or whatever.
Hollywood is all about that. That the greatest quality could have is effortless. He's got it. He's got it. You know what I mean? And it doesn't really matter. You know, acting chops are good and everything is good, but being it, having it is pretty damn awesome. And the Obamas have it. That's for goddamn sure. I don't know what, I have no idea what they're saying. I really don't. I do physically know what they're saying. They're talking about being stronger and being together and being united and facing fear and having the courage to come together and face fear. But I don't know what any of it real. I don't know the practical application for it. Like, they'd be the worst football coaches in the world because there's no X's and O's. It's just all about the hustle and hard work and all that.
Well, you know who called that out from the beginning?
Who?
Sarah Palin.
Hmm.
Oh, it's all hopey changey. He's not saying anything. It's all hopey changey. Hope and change.
Sarah.
She nailed it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, how's that hope and changey stuff going for you?
How's the little Turlock doing?
Turlock.
Tuffy. What the? Don't you have a kid with a weird name? Trigger. How's Trigger doing?
Thank you. Trigger is a blessing, and every day is a gift, and I don't know what they're saying in the magazines, because I don't read magazines, but I can tell you, at our house, the first dude and Trigger and everyone is real great.
Oh, but now, this for clarity, it's Trig, Track, Willow, Bristol, and Piper. I mean, obviously, you know that. I'm saying it for my
Trig
audience.
Well, Trig is short for Trigger.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, just to be clear, and please take this in the spirit in which it's intended.
Oh, boy.
You don't read magazines because you don't care to read magazines or because you can't?
How dare you? Now,
I'm just asking.
Asking. I have a state to run. What do you run besides around the block, young man?
Scotch there.
Ooh. Sick burn, right?
Can you see Russia from where you're sitting?
Not right now, but if I open the curtains, I'll get a good look. And I'll turn this computer right around so you can see Russia from my house.
I was supposed to do some gigs in Alaska. We were supposed to go out like salmon fishing and go to a lodge and everything.
We rolled out the red carpet for you, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, my son was pumped. We were going to go see some bears and see some salmon and do some stand-up and stay in a cabin.
Oh, yeah. That's what we do. Come on down. We'd love to have you.
Well, they shut everything down because of the COVID, you know.
We have ways around that.
Oh, you do? Oh, you know someone?
No. I am.
She's the one.
Oh, you're the someone. Oh, okay. I'm sorry for being condescending.
I will send a helicopter plane to get you. I will send one of those boat planes, you know, with the boat on the bottom and the plane. The seaplane. Thank you very much. And you will be our guest of honor. We'll show you how the salmon swim upstream. It'll be a hoot.
Well, I'll come on out. I promise not to bring any magazines.
Well, you can bring them. I just won't read them.
Yeah, I just look at the pictures anyway. Sarah Palin, everybody. The clip I got was from, the problem, you know, the problem is between Michelle Obama, Barack Obama, and Kamala Harris, Biden's going to have a hard time keeping up in the speech department because...
Yeah,
it was kind of
keep it quick, keep it short.
You mean a speech or actually speaking in the speech department?
Like I said, when I was in front of Congress and I found out Ben Shapiro was going ahead of me and I was going next, I was like, ugh.
Yep.
This is like the best student ever going up to the chalkboard and then you follow them up with a load of
like Jimi Hendrix opening for the Monkees.
Right. Yeah. It's like, ugh. And I mean, a lot of it is, you know, you have to compare it to...
Yeah.
The people that kind of went before you.
The bar's high.
But isn't that what people are doing? Wasn't that the whole thing people were saying was, well, we just need to know who he picks for VP because there's a good chance it put me in coach if anything goes wrong.
I was going to...
You know, so if we like Kamala, then it's fine.
I was going to ask Dave. I don't know. Maybe Brian can check on his phone or his computer, but there's got to be odds on Kamala being president, right? I mean...
The odds
there has to be.
I mean, so
100%.
You break it down, the odds are better than 50-50 on Obama on Biden being president. I'm guessing, or you get a little better than 50.
You guys can guess, or I can just tell you.
I will say that first Biden has to become president, obviously. So that's probably 120.
So these are odds to win the election. This election, they don't give odds on becoming president.
Oh, okay.
See what I'm saying? Odds to win this election.
Yeah, Biden's got to be 130 easy, right? 140?
130 exactly. Well done, my friend.
Well, thanks.
Minus 130. It's funny because I've been following the odds and they've been increasing in Trump's favor. I wonder if a lot of money came in on Biden at first, or recently, I should say, recently. But Trump is even money. Plus 100. Mm-hmm. Kamala Harris to win the presidency is 50-1.
to be.
So they're thinking Joe might drop out or something happen in the next couple months.
Right, but to become president after Joe becomes president.
To step in.
That, there are no odds on that. Because that's like a four-year bet. You know what I mean? You have to hold that bet for 4 years.
Yeah, or 9 months, like depending on what happened. But potentially 4 years.
Potentially, as much, right. As long as 4 years.
Yeah. Hey, random question. I have no idea. I would assume no, but I don't know. When you think, you know, of course, it's Biden, Harris, Trump, Pence. Has there ever been a sitting president who's running for re-election who swapped out their vice president?
I just heard this trivia.
Oh, wow.
Nikki Haley has odds, by the way, on winning the presidency. She's 250-1.
But by hearing that, Brian, you mean it probably has happened.
I think
swapping
so.
Out. Swapping
like,
out.
I don't want Pence anymore. Like grabbing a new running mate as the sitting president.
Oh, yeah. So you don't have to announce during your convention your vice president if he's already the vice president, right?
Right. I'm just saying, I wonder, has it ever happened? Like, I want to run and I want to be president again, but I don't want Pence, or I don't want my vice president. I want to swap out for a new vice president.
I don't know. I wish I knew more about presidents.
I think what I heard was Bush might have been on the verge of replacing Quayle. I read some story in the last like 10 days.
Interesting.
Oh, I forgot about forgot all the Quayle jokes. All right. Here's a clip. I got Kamala doing it's pretty short. It's about 20 seconds. But this is in the I've realized I'm doomed because we have become a feelings based society and I'm not a feelings based person. I'm a sort of,
Let's ask Natalia first.
Right. So I'm getting the brunt of this because I'm Mr. Logical, or at least I attempt to be, but I'm at a deficit in the feelings department, and our society is becoming a feelings-based society. Almost every speech I heard at the DNC was just feelings. All right, we'll play her clip. Go ahead, Maxipata.
This virus, it has no eyes, and yet it knows exactly how we see each other and how we treat each other. And let's be clear, there is no vaccine for racism.
It's true. All right.
You can't argue.
I don't know. I'm like school choice. I want to talk about school choice. That's my thing. But
well,
all right.
That's fun. So an observation I had based on Jordan Peterson, let's just say vis-a-vis, you know, Kamala Harris or even Donald Trump, like they're politicians and he's not, because they have, like you said, that it factor. I may not subscribe. I may not, you know, feel Donald Trump's it factor, but he clearly has it for millions of people. You know what I mean? He connects on an emotional level, you know, build the wall. There's not really a plan, but it makes sense to a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a different kind of it. It's a kind of like, we're going to take this, we're going to take this group and we're going to charge the mountain. We're going to defeat the Nazis. Like, it's that kind of rally politician versus feelings politician, but it's still an emotional thing.
Connection.
And sadly, I want some version of Jordan Peterson running everything because I want him just to look at the numbers, figure it out, and say what you should do and what you shouldn't do. And we're so feelings-laden now that it's impossible. Yes, sorry.
I thought of a better an example, not to be a one-upper. More substantive message, less attractive package. Stephen Hawking.
Oh,
well,
Brian.
I was thinking as you were saying it.
Ableist.
I think Jordan's better. But, I mean, you know, Bill Belichick. You know what I mean? It's just like, hey, we take the best players, we cut the other players, and nobody's beyond being cut, and we'll just put the strategy together. And I'm not here to have a big press conferences. We're just going to go win.
Yeah, Herm Edwards would be a better politician than Belichick, even though Belichick's a genius, and you know we know what Herm Edwards is.
Right.
The risk of even remotely attempting this conversation with you two, Daryl Sutter from the Kings.
Yep.
Daryl
Sutter, the coach for the Kings.
We don't watch communist sports, Gina.
No charm, but like, yep, well, I guess we're going to have to win then. Yep.
Wait, which Kings? Sorry. The hockey Kings?
Yeah, the Hockey Kings.
Oh,
the
sorry.
Kings.
Sorry.
Oh, if you've ever heard of him,
I got to watch. I got to find that guy. I mean, I'm not. Hockey's awesome. Another sport that to me is suffering with no audience. It doesn't aesthetically. It seems weird. I didn't know that. Yeah, I didn't know the audience was as big a part as it was in hockey, but it is. Those people standing up and leaning against the Lexan was kind of nice. All right, I got to. That's him?
Daryl. Yeah.
I didn't even know that. I got to. I'll play a very good clip that I heard of Denzel Washington about race coming off the Kamala Harris clip. And it's, you know, he says what I say, except for he's black and people like him. So I think it's going to be better for you guys. But it's I think Denzel gets the only cure to systemic racism is. Go ahead, Denzel.
As opposed to minorities, do you think we've made any headway?
I think it's more important to make headway in our own house. By the time the system comes into play, the damage is done. They're not locking up seven-year-olds.
Yeah.
You know, I was in Chicago a couple of four weeks ago, and we saw these little kids on bikes with masks on the side of their head, like five or six of them. And the driver said, yeah, they're little yummies. I said, who? He said, little yummies. Look up. Google Little Yummy. Little Yummy was an 11-year-old murderer.
Wow.
And you look at his picture, you'll see the headshot of him, and he's like this. And he got murdered at 11 by a 14-year-old.
Wow.
Who's doing life now, and a 16-year-old.
That makes no sense.
You blame the system? Where was his father? Yeah. It starts in the house. It starts in the home. And yeah, well, my father got locked up. Well, where was his father?
Yeah.
You know, I did talk about my three closest friends, and they did, you know, 15 to 25. One did 28, this and that. I was the only one of the three that had a father in my life, even though my parents were together. But I still had a father who was a gentle man and a good example, and they didn't. We can blame the system if we want, but they didn't lock any of us up at seven.
Yeah.
We were all doing enough to get locked up at 13. My parents sent me in another direction. They didn't have anybody to help them, and they kept doing what they was doing, and the system got them. So I don't. The system is rigged, but why? All the more reason not to help it.
Well, there you go, everybody. I don't know. You think you're going to fix this thing with more, I don't know, counselors or cops or politicians? You think you're going to fix these problems from the outside? It's fucking insane. I think we've been on it for about 50 years. I don't see much change going on. There's always
Ask
a
Elvis.
New there's always a new promise. Yeah, yeah. In That's the right. ghetto. There's always a promise. In the ghetto's 50 years old. I mean, it's, I don't know, 47 years old or 46 years old.
I don't think
you can
even say ghetto
whatever.
Anymore.
Yeah, but look, if Elvis was singing about this shit in the 60s, I'd say there was an issue with it. Somebody, I don't know, Chris Christopherson, I mean, Mac Davis. Mac Davis wrote the song. Oh, 1969. All right. So while we're at the height of the Vietnam War, a white guy named Mac Davis was writing the song that Elvis was recording before all you were born, except for me and Dawson, or maybe just me, trying to figure out the time. And the point is this. Somebody, the biggest entertainer in the world at the time, thought, I should write a song about what's going on in the ghetto. And it wasn't a kind of thing that he had to explain or qualify. People understood that the young kid was born and his dad left the house and the kid got into trouble and then the kid got shot. All the stuff we're hearing about now was all laid out.
It reached a point where it was worthy of a song. You know what I mean? Otherwise, it'd be just confusing. Like, does this happen?
Yeah. And it wasn't a song that needed to be explained. Yes, it reached a point where we wrote a song about it and then people understood. Like when they wrote the song, everybody was kung fu fighting. No one went, what's kung fu? No, we
read that.
We read two different songs, but the same point remains. Right. Carl Douglas, Kung Fu Fighting. He wrote a song,
Everybody was kung fu fighting. No, 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 no. Those cats were fast as lightning. No, 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 no. In fact, was a little bit frightening. Da, 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 da. But they did it with expert timing. Da, 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 da. You know Kung Fu Fighting by Carl Douglas?
Yes, of course.
Oh, okay. Not that well.
Oh, Gina. Poor young, young,
I mean,
naive,
I know it. I don't know all the words.
Naive, young, young, naive, Kansas
young,
native.
Young, young, young,
young, naive.
Here's a song by a gay guy.
Can I tell you, when I pulled up to Laguna Seca with Sonny and Matt DeAndrea in the car, and we're going through the gate. You got to go drive up the hill to get up to Laguna Seca and go through the gate. The song One Night in Bangkok came on the radio. And I cranked it up, and I just said, Sonny, we may be going to the straightest place in the land, but we have the gayest song ever. There's no gayer song than this song. When he goes, I get my kicks above the sun. Oh, wait. I get my kicks above the waistline, sunshine. I was like, Sonny, this is the gayest song you're ever going to hear. And we cranked it up as we drove onto that track. Now, so if Elvis was to write a song, that meant there was a saturation point. And if Carl Douglas was going to write a song about kung fu fighting, that meant everyone knew what kung fu was, and everyone knew what this situation was with the ghetto and the inner city and young black boys being shot. All right, that was 1969. The Vietnam War was in full swing. And now we're going to fix racism, everybody. We're going to fix systemic racism by reimagining a whole bunch of shit. Well, I don't know. I'm kind of with Denzel Washington on this, which is how the fuck are you going to fix the system if no one's parenting and these kids are getting out into the system? All right. That's just me. Unpopular. Not nearly. Well, yes.
This is good and helpful because next time you go on one of your racist rants about fathers and education, we just lay in Denzel doing it. It's awesome. Yeah. Hold on to that.
Hold on to
He'll
Denzel.
Be beloved.
Now, I would argue that as eloquent as Michelle Obama is, she doesn't have an answer for this. And Denzel does, but no one wants to hear Denzel's approach to this problem. And that's sad. But
although Denzel's pretty damn charming.
He's pretty damn charming, but this message is not getting out there. All right, do you have Kung Fu Fighting?
I'm getting it.
Come on, man. Kung Fu
also,
Fighting.
While he's doing
and by
that,
the way,
I'm right. doing this.
Hey, Chris?
Yeah.
People like that song.
Kung Fu Fighting?
Well, it's participatory. It's the people participate in it. It's fun. It's finger-popping music. You know, people go out to have a good time, you know?
That's what you've been
saying. And because Chris is Asian-ish, he won't get in trouble for singing.
That's right. And with all this COVID and whatnot, people really want to enjoy themselves when they go out. Yeah. Finally, go out. And if you guys could cover a song like Kung Fu Fighting, I think the audience would appreciate it. You know what I mean?
I miss the casual racism of the 70s.
Dawson will play for me.
I know. This is a black guy singing about Kung Fu Fighting. And they did the... Da-na-na-na-na-na-na.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
I like when guys would just cash in on whatever was going on right now.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
Ha!
Those kids were fast as lightning.
See this, Chris?
I do like this.
That's not a bad song.
Hold up.
But they fought with expert timing. There were funky China men.
China man. Chinatown.
Yeah, I can't sing this. I don't think I can get away with it.
If anyone can.
It's an ancient Chinese art. Everyone does their part. Yeah. From a fainting to a slip. And I'm kicking from the hip. Everybody was kung fu fighting. You know I feel sorry for? Dawson, pot down. You know
this Carl Douglas, like one-hit wonder guy, whatever came in. You know, there's some 63-year-old session musician who played with Sinatra and all the greats and Count Basie. And it's like, hey, we're doing, just play, we're doing Kung Fu Fighting. Lay down the bass line. And
that's like, a payday.
Oh, bring your jazz flute. Are you fucking kidding me? Keep my fucking name off this goddamn record. Because... these must have just been a bunch of session guys, because Carl Douglas was just a dude, yeah. I guess.
So what happened was, after having spent over 2 hours recording the A side of his record and then taking a break, Kung Fu Fighting was recorded quickly in the last 10 minutes of studio time in only 2 takes.
Wow. This guy's a genius. Close. How come we haven't heard more from him?
That's why he had to go over the top with the huzz and haws and the chopping sounds.
How come he's not addressed the UFC in mixed martial arts? I feel like that should be his next song.
Hey, on the great Mount Rushmore of black artists doing Native American songs, let's not forget Apache, Sugar Hill Gang.
Oh, yeah, Apache.
And you should, boy, put up those lyrics for Adam, because they just Googled words that remind you of Native American things and just threw them in a song.
The
Tonto, jump on it. Kemosabe, jump on it. Custer, jump on it. Apache.
Yeah, it used to be Asians and American Indians were always fair game in terms of appropriation and making fun of. And now, sadly, we've come to a place, we've evolved to a place where you can't even make fun of Asians and indigenous people. All right, let me hit features here. Changing your socks, man, can make a huge difference. Ask Bald Brian, ask me. If we're taking walks or you're hitting the links, it is a difference, man. Features is a real, it's a targeted compression sock. It hugs your arch, keeps the sock in place, prevents bunching and slipping and sliding down in the shoe, reduces discomfort. And, you know, the thing is everyone has figured out, oh, it's a good idea to get a good shoe. Like if whatever, if you're golfing, if you're walking, if you're hiking, if you're riding, whatever, get a good shoe. Well, get a good sock. That goes between your foot and the shoe. See the math I did? There's a lifetime guarantee. If you're unsatisfied at any point, they'll give you a replacement pair. No questions asked. Proudly made, by the way, in North Carolina. It's a family-owned business, and they make them in North Carolina. Features, right, Dawson?
Features socks will change how you feel about socks forever. You can get $10 off your first pair of Features when you use code Adam at features.com. That's FEETURES.com. Promo code Adam for $10 off your first pair of Features.
Well, Steve, Steve O is got a stand up special, and he's been sober for a long time, and we're going to talk to him about everything right after this.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Ace man, get it on, man. I remember a while back ago, you had a colonoscopy and had some thoughts on the nurse saying to you, oh, is this your first rodeo? Well, I'm calling because I think I got you beat, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this one. I just had a colonoscopy a couple of days ago, and when they rolled me into the operating room, the nurse said to me, this is where the magic happens. Get it on, man.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Oh, it is Steve-O in studio. Good to see you, Steve-O.
Yeah, good to see you too, Adam.
Yeah. It's all going to be time for you to get a colonoscopy pretty soon.
Yeah, I've actually got a plan for that.
What does that mean, you have a plan for that?
Well, I mean, I want to ask the doctor doing the colonoscopy how much he thinks I can really fit in there if I was trying to, like, you know, reach my maximum potential. And I predict that he's going to say, oh, you don't want to do that. You know, you don't want to try and...
Well, how much of what can you fit in there?
Well, I don't know. I thought maybe I could take an assault rifle off the streets, melt it down into something, and get the whole thing up there.
Mm. I'm not a physician, but... I've first off, they give you the propofol, I think,
I think they do the Michael Jackson stuff. Like, by the way, you say whatever you want about Michael Jackson taking that propofol. Once you take that propofol, you go, oh, I get it. I could get used to this shit.
For sure. And interesting that I've had all these surgeries, all these procedures since I got sober. So I didn't even really think it was a big deal. I had an idea for my new tour to be administered general anesthesia drugs while I was riding a bicycle. Mm-hmm. And so we did a bunch of research. We reached out to anesthesiologists. They said, watch out for propofol because there's an epidemic of people who have access to it rampantly abusing it for the reason you just pointed out. It feels great.
Yeah.
They said, but there's another drug called etomidate, which works very similarly, which makes you nauseous, makes you barf. It burns going in your veins, super unpleasant. Nobody would ever use it for fun. So I did that one.
And how was we'll get into special in a second, but how is sobriety? Like a lot of guys in sobriety, they have a dental procedure or something, and then they're prescribed painkillers, right. And then they don't want to take the painkillers because they're
correct.
Sober. How about you? How's the policy?
I have not had a painkiller. I haven't filled out a single prescription for a painkiller since I got sober. So the painkillers that I have had since I got sober are strictly what's been administered to me by doctors in the hospital and professional situations. Like I had open reduction surgery on my ankle where they put everything together. I shattered the thing and I had 11 screws and a plate. That was the most invasive surgery that I've had, and I got through all of the aftermath of it with Tylenol and Advil.
I was marveling at the beginning of the show that you've been sober for over a decade.
Yeah.
Which to me feels it's an incredible passage of time thing because I feel like Steve-O, yeah, sober.
Right.
Yeah, what's it been, 4 years? Like it doesn't feel like over
it's
a
been
decade.
12. I turned 12 on March 10th.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate
Happy
it,
birthday.
Dude.
I think Drew had something to do with that and Johnny
Absolutely.
Knoxville had something to do with that.
Absolutely, yeah.
Steve-O's come a long way, actually. If I remember correctly, Steve-O, in the first Jackass movie, the one stunt you refused to do was sticking the car up
Correct.
Your butt because you had some sort of, like your dad would get upset or something.
Right.
And now you're trying to going for assault rifles. This is a big step, buddy.
It doesn't have to be an assault rifle. That was just the first thing that came to mind. take something off the streets. But yeah, it was the one thing I ever backed out of, was to have the idea was to put a toy car, like a matchbox car, right up your butt. And then you go to the hospital complaining of, of a sore butt. And then they take the x-ray and the x-ray shows a car up there. And it's genius. And it worked out great.
It was a great scene. The
it
doctor
really
was perfect. He's like, don't tell anyone. He knows that's too much.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course I backed out. It was our brother, Ryan Dunn, who did that. And, sadly we lost Ryan, 9 years ago now. And we went into production, for Jackass 4, if you can believe it, at this age, they and Paramount announced the movie, everything. We got into production. We managed to film for 1 week before it got shut down by the coronavirus. And in that 1 week, I decided that, Ryan put that toy car up his butt for me. And, now he's not here. I want to do this for him.
A tribute.
Yeah. I want to really. And I told the director going into it, I said, my asshole is your asshole. But you can do whatever you want with it.
Grab that.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want with it. And it turned out that, like, in the early days of Jackass, that got me off the hook. That it made my asshole less interesting to them, that I want to offer it up.
I was picturing a sort of Pulp Fiction, Christopher Walken-type situation with the watch. You know what I
yep.
mean? Remember
yep.
he gave
the
speech
right.
about
yeah,
the watch?
The
but, you're,
yeah.
but you're kind of doing that with the matchbox car and your fallen brother
yeah.
who isn't with us anymore. But as to commemorate his life, you're going to put a Hot Wheels up your ass.
Well, I want to really take it up a notch. It's going to be whatever it is going to be considerably larger than a matchbox car.
I would imagine. So you guys are doing 4, or you got a week into 4,
right.
And we're We're looking at it. Yeah,
it was a real blessing that we got that 1 week, because I think there's obvious question marks around whether it's a good idea for us to be filming a new Jackass movie at this stage in our lives. And what we demonstrated in that first week was that that it not only is it working, but everything worked like fantastically well. And apparently, for Paramount, our Jackass 4 is. Really made it up the list of their priorities. So, if movie theaters still exist after this pandemic, then likely we'll be in them.
It's fun coming up with the stuff, right? Because there's this weird balance. When I used to do the Man Show, and Jimmy and I would sit around, we would have to kind of come up with stuff. It wasn't Jackass stuff, but we had like the Wheel of Destiny. And if you landed on a good slot, you could take a bath with a juggy. And if you landed on a bad spot, Adam would pee on your wallet, or you'd have to do a bong load of Adam's pubes or whatever. It was kind of jackassy stuff. And there's this kind of thing of like, what will the legal department let us do? What will work? What won't work? What sounds good but isn't really going to be good? Like, we'd have ones where, like, it's funny, like Daniel would go, we're going to hook this guy's underwear up to an industrial crane, and we're going to hang him and give him a giant wedgie by his underwear, and he'll be hanging, flailing from his underwear. And I'd be like, Daniel, if you start lifting up the guy's underwear and he's standing there, it's just going to tear the underwear and just go up, and he'll just be standing there. He's not going to be dangling and flailing about from his underpants.
We've had better luck with that.
You have?
The first movie, we had a guy jump out of a tree attached with the cords attached to his underwear, and that, I think that might have broken. But we've since
perfected
the code. We've cracked
the atomic
code.
Wedgie.
Yeah, the ultimate wedgies for sure.
Yeah, Max Pat has got some bad, but it was fun kind of sitting around and just thinking of stupid stuff how it would visually play out.
Uh-huh.
And in a way, I think the straightest forward stuff was always the easy. It was always the most satisfying. Like Adam pees on your wallet was the best. It's just the guy lost his wallet, went right in the toilet. I just turned around on stage and started whizzing all over the guy's wallet. It's as straightforward as it could get. But right. Satisfying.
Absolutely. And you're 100% right. Sometimes things don't work that you think will. Sometimes things that aren't that great, don't seem that great, are epic. I had one that I did where this was an idea I was sitting on for the longest time, that if I were to go skydiving, that the first time you have the tandem instructor strapped to your back. So I thought, okay, this is great. I'm going to go skydiving for my first time, and I'll be butt naked with the guy strapped on my back, and I'll be furiously jacking off. So I'll actually time it. As I'm falling out of the plane, I'm just coming everywhere. And there were so many layers to it.
It's nuanced.
Finding the company that would let us do it, the guy who was willing to be strapped to my back, the logistics of getting the job done in an airplane full of dudes pointing cameras at you. I mean, there was a lot going on. I'm really thrilled that I pulled that off. And it was one of those ones, man. Fairly simple. It came out exactly the way I pictured it.
I want to say that what people – so when I was in high school, all me and my friends did is torture each other, and everyone thought it was homoerotic. But what people don't really understand is in order to get to that next level of torture, male on male, it has to take a turn for the gay. It always takes a turn for the gay, and people don't realize that. They think you're gay, but what you're really doing is you're – doing these crazy homoerotic things in order to sufficiently humiliate.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. There's definitely been a lot of homoeroticism in our humor, and part of me thinks it's a noble effort to rid the world of homophobia.
Yes, oh, wow. You're a hero. You should be on a postage stamp beating off in an airplane. Yes, Brian?
He'll be on a billboard.
Sorry.
Jackass 3D is the gayest movie I've ever seen. And I include Brokeback Mountain. I include all the usual suspects. I enjoyed it very much, perhaps for that reason. But it's by far the gayest movie I've ever seen.
I think Jackass number 2 might have edged it out.
Really?
No.
Who got, in Jackass 1, who got the dick bit by the snake?
That was Jackass 2.
That was 2.
That was the first thing we shot for that movie. That was Chris Pontius.
Well, it's weird. I don't know if everything hits everyone the same. And I'll do plenty of things. I'll jump off plenty of buildings into plenty of swimming pools. And like, I don't have a problem with a lot of stuff. But the dick and the snake,
yeah,
that would be a tough one. That'd be a tough threshold to cross, you know, yeah, I mean, when you're pushing your dick into the terrarium.
Right. Yeah, it was a puppet show, right, as I recall.
Do people, when you come up with the gags, as we call them in the business, when you come up with the gags, do you come up with them and assign them to people? Because they could get hurt, killed, injured, whatever, right, or do you have to kind of do your own gags?
Well, it's a great question, man. I always get the same questions all the time, and very few people ever ask me this. But I think that the formula is based on a respect for intellectual property. So if somebody comes up with an idea, it's essentially that idea is that person's property. And so if you see anybody performing a gag, then you can assume either that person came up with the gag or was given permission from the person who did come up with the gag. Now, sometimes people will deliberately write a gag for an individual because it just fits that person. Sometimes nobody wants to do it, and then they'll trickle down. You know, the bad ideas will trickle down to our buddy Danger Aaron. But yeah, there's a respect for IP that's kind of cool.
I do remember, I think it was Jackass 2, possibly 3, where Bam came up. He drew a very crude drawing of the Wee Man and the big fellas. Preston.
Yeah, Preston, correct.
They jumped off a bridge or something in tandem, and they kind of slingshot at each other. So that's an example of when you would write a gag specifically for someone else, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, people don't – I don't know if people know this about Knoxville. Knoxville's a super nice guy. He's also a really good athlete. Like, he always plays in the father-son softball, the whatever the Father's Day softball game that Jimmy puts up over at UCLA. Sadly, one of the many things that we could have done this year, but we didn't, but outdoors and all. But I think he hit a home run over the fence kind of thing. Like, he was a good ball player, too, as well. He's like a good athlete.
He was a very high-level baseball player, I believe, in high school.
Right. Yeah, he can definitely play baseball because I played like 5 softball games with him now. Yeah. Always a good hang, that guy. He was freehanding ones with you at you on your billboard.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you just see it, I mean, that ball's coming at your head 100 miles an hour.
He had a good stroke.
It was it was one of the few, if not the only times I can recall all the Jackass guys around saying, stop, it's too much, it's too gnarly.
Right.
Yeah, and it's crazy.
Well, speaking of gnarly,
he also has a deep kick.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of gnarly, when talk about doing something that's for your own good, when you make amends to him, and, you know, when Adam said, I can't wrap my head around somebody sticking their dick in a terrarium. As a woman, when people like you barely brush somebody, little sack tap, and they go down, that's not something I'll ever understand. I don't get how that could be painful. What the big, oh, I gotta feel in my stomach. Like, I don't get it. I don't get what you're saying. I felt that kick. I felt it deep into my uterus. I felt that. Did you ever recover from that kick?
So did Steve.
It was, yeah, that one was heavy. And I just got to say thank you so much for watching the program. I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, it was very funny. I should give it a plug, by the way. It's been long enough. It's called Gnarly. It's a very funny stand-up special. And it's kind of, as someone who did a stand-up special that has some visuals, my stand-up was that way, sort of stories about your life. Like, instead of, you know, tell jokes for 60 minutes, have it be a little more interactive than that. That's what this is. And it's available now at Steve. O.com. So it's like fun for the whole family, as long as the whole family is a dude and over 18 and drunk.
for sure. Thank you. It was really exciting, man. I mean, I got into stand up like 2006. I started touring in 2010, and for all my efforts to establish myself as a stand up comedian, it just always felt like, oh, you know, like, what's this guy doing? And then when it struck me that I could be doing multimedia comedy where I'm telling the stories and editing into it, like footage to illustrate the stories I'm telling, then I feel like I found my place in comedy. And it just worked really well, and I'm just so excited about it.
Well, look, you know, doing your first stand-up special at age 45 or 45 and a half or whatever.
This is my second one. The first one I did for Showtime, and I was sure it was going to just change my life. Everybody's going to respect me. I'll be established. And damn, that special came and went, and nothing changed about my life.
I guess I'm proving your point by thinking this was your first one. Although I think I remember the first one. Was it 4 years ago?
Yeah, it came out in 2016.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, yeah. I now do think that. But the notion that you are this like kind of professional stunt dummy and then you come up with doing stand-up after the age of 40, essentially, is pretty impressive.
Well, thank you, man. It was, I don't know how old I was in 2006. Maybe I was 32. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm getting up there, and it's really it's really exciting to just, you know, be thriving, not only like in a pandemic, you know, but just at this age, like, you know, even if the Jackass 4 doesn't happen because there's no more movie theaters, I feel like I'm in a pretty good spot because, you know, I've kind of built up a thing.
Well, you're going to just go back in as soon as it's – I don't know why you guys need to be safe. Everyone's kicking each other in the nutsack. I mean, what do you need any protocols for? But I guess for the camera guy. But
right.
I'd imagine you guys are going to get back to it the second you can. And then I'm also assuming – is everyone kind of in for a taste? Is it like a rev share kind of deal?
There's a little bit, yeah. Uh-huh.
So you can stand to make a lot of money because the budget isn't that great on something like this just by the nature of it, right?
It's been very profitable in, you know, the past. I forget what the first one made like $65 million. The second one made like $85 million. The third one made like $120 million. And the budgets were reasonably small. Like they got bigger as we went. The first budget I think was $6 million. Then I don't know about two, but like $20 million for the third one.
Right,
it's a good margin.
Yeah, the opposite of Battlefield Earth. That's what you, when you make movies. That's what you want to do. Small budget, big fat return. All right, let's see. So let me just hit a spot here, and then maybe we'll think about doing a. Doing some news, Steve-O, hang out with us. I'm glad. I'm glad there's sober Steve-O. I like sober Steve-O. And think how much you'd be drinking during this pandemic if you were still drinking.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that anything would be any different, pandemic or not. I was pretty.
You're pretty maxed out.
Yeah, I was going. There was no longevity.
How did it? I mean, obviously, you probably didn't want to stop drinking when Steve-O or Dr. Drew were talking about it. How did that day work out? How much of that do you recall?
I remember it actually pretty well. Knoxville had reached out to Dr. Drew saying, hey, I think we're going to lose Steve-O. Dr. Drew said, I agree completely. Get over there. Do what's called a 5150 where you can commit somebody to a psychiatric ward against their will. And Drew said, you know, if you have to kick his ass and tie him up with duct tape and throw him in the trunk, just do whatever you got to do, but just get him to the hospital. And so that's what they did. They came over. There were eight of them.
Knoxville and the
production team of Jackass. There was the director Jeff Tremaine, the, you know, executive producer Trip Taylor, the sound guy, one of the camera guys. It was like it was crazy. The same people who helped me hurt myself for so long, coming in to rescue me from myself. And when I got into the psych ward, I was belligerent. I was like, you know. Throwing furniture around.
Well, what were you? Were you drinking? Was it just alcohol?
Oh God, no! It was God, no! It wasn't. It was ketamine was a big player at the, you know, at that time. Cocaine was always a huge thing. You know, I can thread my nose with a shoelace through the big hole in the wall in there. The nitrous oxide, PCP, fuck video head cleaner. I didn't care. I was pretty gnarly.
So it wasn't just a spiked seltzer?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm asking.
And so they're checking me into this. Checking me into the psychiatric ward, and I'm throwing a temper tantrum. And
this is in Los Angeles.
It was at Cedars-Sinai. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I remember being tackled by secure orderlies. Security. Right. They threw me on this. Stretcher thing and jabbed a needle in my butt cheek, and then that was just lights out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They hit you with the propofol.
Yeah, the booty juice. I think I forget what they.
I'm glad they have that needle. So they hit you with that. You go out,
and then I woke up, and I was in the part of the hospital where the doors just don't open. And interestingly, they had two wings of this psychiatric unit. There was East and West. And one of them was for sort of standard issue, harmful to yourself and others, cases. And then the other wing was for the something else variety, the really special ones. Mm-hmm. And I was in the something else wing. And for my belligerent behavior upon arrival, they changed my status from 5150, which is a 3-day involuntary hold, to 5250, which is an entire 2 weeks involuntary.
Wow. So I didn't even know. That's this amp goes to 11. I didn't know they had a 52.
Yeah.
That sounds like a punchline.
We'll let
you got 5250. He's so fucking crazy. But they have a 5250.
They have 5250, and that means a 2-week-long involuntary hold, and that was the saving grace because 3 days wouldn't have done the trick. It was actually on day 4 or 5 that, that I'd start, I got to do something here.
So who were the first people you remember seeing over there?
Oh, my God. You have great questions, man. They had me sharing a room in the psych ward with this one guy. He was hearing voices. He was it was he was being attacked the whole time. That it was the most annoying roommate you could
right,
have.
Yeah.
Then there was another guy in the hallway. And the hallway was carpeted. It was the only thing carpeted. And this guy, I watched him pull his pants down and actually shit, a huge shit right on the carpet in the hallway. And that wasn't enough. After he got done shitting, he rolled around in it, smearing it all over himself.
The sad part is these guys are in front of Garagos's restaurant right now in downtown L.A., sitting on his patio furniture. Drew always tells me when you're that far gone, you have this obsession with shit, which has got to be working around those people. Got to be the fucking worst, right? When that's their thing. But
it's their medium.
Right. So they work in. So you are there. This is horrible. Who do you have a recollection of Knoxville and company doing this to you?
Oh, the actual intervention for sure.
Yeah. And so somebody comes down, somebody from Drew's camp, somebody from Knoxville's camp.
Nobody even came down. They just told Knoxville, get over there and get him to the hospital. I think maybe Drew helped to have the hospital notified and expecting me.
And at what point do you go from that place? I mean, you're there for 2 weeks.
I was there for, I believe, 7 days. And, by that time, my story was, I'm willing to, to surrender, to commit myself to recovery. And I want to go, door to door to rehab. No pack a bag, no think about it. And I went from the psych ward straight to it was actually Dr. Drew's Las Encinas Hospital, where he was the director of the chemical dependency unit.
Yeah, you didn't want to go back to your place.
Correct. I had just been evicted. I had a colorful last week before my intervention. I was I was arrested for cocaine possession and vandalism. My relationship ended. I was evicted from my apartment. I was committed to a psych ward.
Wow. So, I mean, you went out in a blaze of glory. I mean,
yeah.
You did everything you could do. And then you show up at Drew's place, and how long do you stay there?
Well, I showed up at Drew's place while I was being processed into, entered into his program. I remember telling Drew, I said, I know that the statistics are really bad, you know, that the odds are not in favor. Most people don't get sober. I was aware of that. And I said, if I'm going to do this, I want to give myself every advantage I can have. I want to go all in. And so however long you recommend I stay in this unit, I want to stay significantly longer to give myself a better chance of actually staying sober, which was a reckless move because the place was fucking expensive. And yeah. I'm like handing Drew a blank check. But what he said to his credit was, I don't recommend that you stay here for more than 30 days. But if you're really serious about it, then I recommend you go into a sober living, you know, like a halfway house. Mm-hmm. And I ended up staying in a halfway house until I had been sober for 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was going to film Jackass 3D and go get catapulted up into the sky. And, you know, I'm going to my halfway house manager, like getting permission to miss my curfew. You know, like it was pretty intense. And I don't think I know anybody who stayed in sober living for that long and who didn't stay and remain sober.
Well, what do you think? Is there a component to your personality that's a kind of an all-in component?
For sure.
So you're all in with drugs and you're all in with these stunts and then you're all in with sobriety.
Pretty much, yeah. I moderation's never been my strong suit.
It's got to be tough in a relationship. I mean, it's good at the beginning, I guess. At a certain point, all in is tough in relationships.
You fight hard, you love hard.
Yeah. Is it tough in relationships?
I mean, I never managed to make it so much as 10 months into a relationship until I met my girl now. And with that said, I was, you know, my sexual lifestyle, you know, called for yet another 12-step fellowship. Mm-hmm. And I really took that seriously, you know, in an effort to, you know, learn how to have a healthy relationship. And now I'm engaged. And
these kids have been at it for 9 months and 28 days, everybody. So
I'm with my girl for over 3 years now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You couldn't have a relationship unless you're sober, right?
I mean, absolutely not.
There's no possible way.
I couldn't do anything if I wasn't sober. I don't think I could do anything.
You'd be dead by now, right? It's been 12 years. I think you probably would have OD'd by now.
If I wasn't dead by now, it would have been even more depressing.
Wow.
I think that's safe to say. But you know, like by the virtue of not. You know, wasting so much time getting loaded, being loaded, making horrible decisions, you know, like with all the, you know, acting out. It frees up a lot of time to focus on what you actually like want to do. And at the end of the day, it feels for me like, wow, life's not actually that complicated or difficult, you know?
What percentage of the gags / stunts would you have executed in the first season, or you know, Jackass, and then Jackass the movie? Did you have something in you? Well, you always had something in you, but I mean, like, were you affected or intoxicated to some degree?
You know, with Jackass, if it's like the movie Boogie Nights, where Burt Reynolds is telling Marky Mark, like, no, I'm not shooting you. You know,
right. you're too loaded.
Right. That happened to me.
By the pool. Yeah, right.
That happened to me where I was just, you know, too fucked up. It's like, yo, we're not shooting with you. You know, and like there were a number of scenes in Jackass where it was, you know, we're hungover, you know, but there wasn't ever like really we're wasted on camera. That wasn't the spirit of it. And I don't think that I ever did any stunts anyway. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I did some stuff because I was wasted. But for the most part, I do it all because I'm an attention whore.
So it's not a scene. It's not a situation where, like, there's some artist who, you know, think they can write great songs because they're getting high or whatever, and then they get sober and they lose their, like, creative spark or something.
That is a thing. That is definitely a thing. And for, like, when we were filming Jackass 3D, you know, I turned 2 years sober, like, when we were in production on that. And still, I was terribly uncomfortable in my own skin. I was like, just, you know, I hadn't found my voice. And there is like early sobriety is uncomfortable as fuck, and you know, there are concerns about, like, I've lost who I am, but yeah, I fought through it, and I feel like now I'm way more creative than I was before.
What is the regimen? Like, I'm always kind of interested in the schedule of things. Like, when you're in a halfway house, how does that work schedule-wise? Are you guys, like, on a clock, like everyone's up at 8 and we're doing breakfast at 8:30, or do you just meander out of your bedroom when you're good and ready, and is there lights out? Like, how much – is it the army? How much regimen is there?
If you're not up and out of bed with your bed made – by 9 o'clock in the morning, you're getting written up. And if you get written up 3 times, you're out.
So there's a discipline that had been removed from your former life. I mean, that I see. I'm all about that. I mean, 9 doesn't sound like 6 a.m. But what I'm saying is I feel like people need a schedule. They need rules.
Accountability.
And they need accountability.
Yeah.
And we're kind of waiving a lot of that. Like, let them find themselves and let them do their own thing. I think when you leave people alone to find themselves, they start chewing on their own legs, like when a dog just starts picking at itself. Like, I feel that's what happens with people. I wish we were all something enough to handle it without the clock and the discipline and the guidance counselor and the drill sergeant and the football coach, like, kind of doing that. But I realize a lot of the people who I see in our society that seem insanely miserable are people that aren't on a schedule. Like, they don't have that, hey, up, out of bed, here we go, make your bed, time to work out, then we shower, then we eat, then we go. It sounds like, first off, it's something that nobody wants to do, and then secondly, it sounds like the opposite of creativity or living a free life. But when you just let people alone, they go to bed at 4 in the morning, they wake up at 12:30, they have a fucking candy bar, and they go to take a nap, beat off, and then go eat another candy bar. Like, people go south when you pull them out of a structure.
I think so. Yeah.
So you
well, and like you said, drill sergeants and football coaches and all those correction officers, whatever, those jobs wouldn't exist if we did this for ourselves. So the answer is kind of in the question. We wouldn't need them.
Yes, we wouldn't have so many thousands of people working at prisons or coaches or counselors or whatever if everyone just sort of tended to themselves and did a good
right.
job. Like, if we were sort of, you know, if we were wired like ants, where it's like you just go, you do your job, you do your job, you do his job, you do that, we'd be the worst fucking ants in the world. Half of their people would just be sitting and eating, watching the other ants work, and then complaining that they're not working hard enough. Why do you get to eat all the good parts of the June bug? Because I got up and I got out of the fucking hill, Junior.
Yeah.
Ant hill, that is. All right. Let me hit True Nijin, then we'll break, and then we'll do some news. True Nijin. I've been taking this True Nijin for cellular health. It's a vitamin. Dr. Drew is on it as well. I've been on it for about 6 months. Drew's been on it for a number of years now. We get older, our bodies experience a near 50% decline in NAD, which negatively affects our health and our cells and our body. And there's lifestyle stressors as well, like lack of sleep or stress, the immune system being overwhelmed. It depletes NAD, and you need it for energy, and you need it for cell strength. It's backed by Nobel Prize-winning scientists, clinical research, global regulatory approvals. I hope you guys are getting on this. I'm on it. Drew's on it. And many Shannon Sharp is on it, by the way, if you want to talk about a guy who looks pretty good for his age. Support cellular energy and defense with TRU. That's True. TRU. NIAGEN.com. Use the code Adam. Get $20 off any 3 month plus supply through September 4th. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with Steve-O and the news right after this.